Radiolab is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. Thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target and destroy cancer-causing proteins right inside the cell. It's how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Wait, you're listening.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radio Lab.
From
WNYC.
See?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krolwich.
This is Radiolab.
Today we have the story of just how hard it can be to be who you actually are when it seems like the entire world is doing its best to make you who you actually aren't.
Well, I guess I could, I mean, this could be too many details, but...
The story starts for us with reporter David Conrad.
So for me, it was back in late 2014. I was living in Philadelphia as a grad student.
And at the time, David was applying for jobs. And one of the jobs he was applying for was at a radio show that was doing a series about international women's issues.
And so I had this on my mind, and I was taking a bus to the university, and I just overheard somebody talking about their recent trip to Venice.
And of course, the classic tourist thing to do when you go to Venice is to take a ride on the canal boats, the gondolas. You know, go down the canal, maybe someone sings you the famous song. It's very romantic. In any case, the person sitting on the bus next to David was telling their friend
that they had taken a gondola ride with this first ever woman gondolier in Venice.
Yeah, and then we were like poking around and we realized like how...
But how did this become a we?
No,
who are you?
I'm Kristen.
Kristen and, Clark, also a journalist and radio producer.
Uh-huh.
And she and David are partners and collaborators.
I mean, and this is what was interesting is like... We realize like how big a deal it is to be a female gondolier. This is like it's like a 900-year-old tradition.
900 years.
Yeah.
All men.
Yeah, all men. And it's always passed father, son, father, son, father, son, or like uncle, nephew down the line.
So this is like this has been no ladies now, no ladies then, no ladies ever.
Yeah. No ladies in 900 years.
Yeah.
Just think about that for a second. Almost 1,000 years of all men, 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 men. And then one day you get a woman.
Right. As a headline? Woman breaks through 900-year-old glass ceiling?
I thought that sounds like a good pitch.
Are you kidding? It sounds like God kissed you in the lip.
Exactly. It sounded like the perfect empowerment story, I guess.
Yeah, and so we're kind of just like Googling it, and like it's all over the media.
It seemed like every outlet from The Guardian to The New York Times to The Financial Times to the Cedar Rapids Gazette to newspapers.
It made it all the way to Cedar Rapids?
To newspapers in Germany and in China and Australia. And... they all the articles laid out the same basic story. It was this Algerian woman from Germany named Alex Hay showed up in Venice 20 years ago, got around a gondoliers association that never wanted to see a woman become a gondolier, and eventually became the first ever female gondolier of Venice. The whole thing, of course, sparking this giant gender war. But that was sort of it. Pretty much the headline and a picture was the story. Many of the articles didn't actually have all that many quotes from Alex. And so for me, it sounded like a great, simple opportunity to go back and tell a deeper story.
Yeah, just like, who is this person? Why would somebody be so hell-bent on getting into this club that just so clearly does not want them?
Yeah.
So we emailed Alex.
Just, we're interested in your story. We're wondering if you might be willing to spend a few days with us this summer. And I was hoping it would just be like, yes, I'm happy to meet with you for a couple hours. And that would have been great. But we got an email back right away that said... if you come do this story, you have to spend a week with me.
A week?
Yeah. And then there are all these questions about, like, who we were as journalists, what our purpose was, and a bunch of demands. You have to stay in the city. You can't stay in, like, one of the suburbs in Margera, even though it's cheaper. Like, you have to be in the city. I want you to hear these sounds at this time. I have a vision for things.
Did you have the sense that there was something a little odd?
Yeah. And, I mean, the message was definitely, I want to tell a different story.
Did you have any idea what that meant?
No idea.
But we had that echoing. I had that echoing in my head.
All right. Do you want to switch backpacks since I gave you the heavy one?
So we flew to the Venice airport, took a bus to city center.
That was really fast.
We stepped off the bus, and you could smell the salt in the air from the Grand Canal, and it was kind of raining a little bit. It was around midnight.
We're kind of, you know, getting our bearings, grabbing our bags, and we look up, and across the parking lot, there's Alex.
Standing under a lamppost, just leaning against it with a cigarette.
Smoke kind of curling up into the light of the street lamp.
Short hair, dark, it was slicked back.
Do you think you were in a Fellini movie?
Honestly, I didn't know what to think. This person was legit under a lamp, smoking.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good.
Light travel.
So quick.
Up close, Alex looked like, taller than I expected. A strong build, kind of a face that was a little weathered, like someone who works outside all day on the water.
I was finishing quite late, so when you called, I just finished. So.
Oh, perfect.
How was your flight?
It was good. It was long. It was, you know, we flew to Moscow first, which is...
And since it was late, we made a plan with Alex to meet up at 5:45 p.m. the next day on the steps of La Fenice Opera House.
Okay, beautiful little opera house.
Yeah.
I was rushing out to find you, so I left all the mess in the gondola. Usually it's not like...
So anyway, the plan was to go out on a gondola ride.
Which was one of Alex's demands in that first email. So we walk around the corner to where the gondola is parked, and...
Oh, my God. The boat was just, like, shining.
So the gondola was made for three people.
It's long, narrow, jet black.
This was where the noble couple was sitting.
Antique cushions, golden trim.
And over there was the servant sitting.
Alex had had it about 12 years.
It was already quite an old boat when I got it.
And it had a name.
This is called Pegasus.
Pegasus.
And you choose it.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
All right, so if you want to come in, one step.
So we climb into the boat.
Perfect. Sit on the little angle there.
And Alex stands at the back holding the oar, and we're down sitting in the lower seats, kind of just like pointing the microphone up.
Alex, I know you were just telling us how annoying it is when people snap pictures. Is it okay if I take photographs every once in a while?
No.
You came here to study it first?
No, that's not what I said.
And it was pretty much immediately clear...
You came here... I mean...
...that it was not going to be an easy interview.
You came here...
When
you studied... I know, but I was wondering...
...and the rowing.
Right,
you need to do a lot of practice.
Yeah, we had a notebook full of questions and things that we had pulled from all these articles we'd read, and that pretty quickly became useless.
What I was asking, though, is you didn't come...
And whenever I asked about being the first female gondolier, and the first woman in 900 years to do this...
Oh, it's an old story.
What's that?
You can read that everywhere on the net. I mean, so, you know, such an over and over and over and over. It's all set already. Why do we need to repeat things which are already done?
This is a very frequent journalism problem. Like, you become boring to the person you're interviewing,
right.
And you start flailing.
Exactly, and we were like,
You don't have anything more.
No.
Why are we here?
What do you do?
You know, we just thought maybe we should just be quiet, probably.
We are about to make the tightest.
We moved away from the tourist centers of the city and into these smaller canals. And as we'd go around these tight turns, Alex would sing out to let the other boats know that we were coming.
So here we have a crossway. This is why I shout out my direction. It's in order to avoid accidents because you cannot hear the gondola arriving.
You know, we go under these beautiful archways, past hidden gardens.
You don't necessarily need eyes in order to appreciate a gondola tour. And every channel has a different sound. There are some channels you have a lot of birds singing. Sometimes they fly in your face. So, this is a beautiful entrance here I wanted to show you.
At one point, our gondola cut through this rectangle of light, shining from an open kitchen door.
It was nice. I mean, this side of Venice was unexpected and really beautiful, but the whole time we were sitting on our notepads and we were definitely quietly panicking.
Well, you know, the...
You know, I didn't know this at the time, but...
I thought there was some, you know, I was like, they're maybe a little too young and...
I think Alex was testing us.
It may be a little bit too... they don't have enough experience, maybe. That was my concern. But I liked the... I liked the enthusiasm. And I liked the... there was an honesty, which I liked.
Did you ever figure out what you were being sussed out for or what was going on there?
No, for sure not on the boat, but we actually made plans to go out to dinner that night.
And considering how the boat ride went, we thought at this point we should return to square one and leave the recorder at home and just try and have a conversation.
Anyway, we sit down outside and very few people are in the restaurant. We were the only table outside. They had to open.
And when we got there too, we should say we met Alex's girlfriend, right?
Yeah, and we're just kind of making small talk. And yeah, it turns out Alex's girlfriend is a photographer and she'd done this photo essay of Alex. And the photos are really striking. Like one of them, Alex is just like drowning under the water. There's one that's just like Alex's back is to the camera.
This ripped muscular back.
Yeah, like arms splayed, like looking out the window over the city of Venice.
Venice's lone defender. You
just
know.
Like so badass and like kind of like superhero style. So we were just chatting about the photos and asking Alex's girlfriend, like, you know, tell me a little bit more about what inspired you to take these photos and, you know, like small talk, friendly stuff. And she kind of was like, you know, it's so strange. You know, we thought it was so clear. We like the photos were so like they emphasized every masculine quality on Alex's body. You know, in our artist statement, you know, we used all of the male forms in Italian, you know, like lui, which means he, instead of lei, which means she. But everybody at the photo exhibit was like, oh, must have been a typo or you made a mistake. And she was like, which is funny because I'm Italian, so I should know. And I was like, oh, pronouns. Lui, he, Alex, she used he. He, Alex is a he? Is Alex trans, like... Oh my gosh, Alex is a transgender man.
Whoa. What did that mean to you in that moment?
What I thought that meant was Alex was probably born in a body that he didn't identify with.
Yeah, I mean, mine was, I didn't think transgender. I didn't think, I thought Alex is a guy, of course. Alex is a guy.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised. Were you surprised?
No.
I wasn't that surprised. I mean, I wasn't. I'm not saying that the pronoun
right.
thing
I mean,
is accurate.
I would say that like flipping into he, not a thing. Like it was like Alex is a he. Alex is he. He is sitting at the table with us. Alex and his girlfriend. Very quickly, it was like him. I'm looking at him. And then I start thinking about the story that we had come here to tell that was about all of the women things that she had done. Her woman, hero, heroine, first female in 900 years, international symbol of female power. You start thinking about that and it's like, those things are really hard to square in your head. This real person is also these stories, and how did that happen? What has it been like for 20 years to be inside of that story when you're actually a man?
After who knows how many articles have been written about Alex, this is the first time that he is publicly telling his story as a man. And so we should probably just stop for a second and talk about pronouns, because this is really important for many transgender people. In moments when Alex was publicly understood as a woman and was getting international press for it, we've decided, with Alex's permission, to only use his name or his title of first female gondolier. While some of the people interviewed for the story were unaware that Alex is transgender and do use female pronouns or do refer to him as a woman, when we're talking about him, we will only use male pronouns.
So after that dinner, we made plans for the next day.
So we're gonna go somewhere.
On his motorboat, he would just take us to a quiet spot and we would talk, was the agreement.
On the water.
On the water.
Shut up! Stop it! Basta! Hey, Lala!
Okay. And how does that begin?
A lot of false starts.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I can ask. Has anyone ever asked you what gender pronoun you prefer?
No, never. Never happened. Ever.
So after getting some of the basics out of the way, Alex kind of started at the beginning.
Well, you know, it's a long story. I was born transgender.
This is in Germany. Alex tells us he was born with a female body, but at a pretty early age knew himself to be a little boy.
I knew already before I went to school. With 3 years, I was standing on the toilet to pee inside.
Alex says that, you know, for him, you know, he had the sense even when he was three that there should just be something on his body that wasn't there.
Yeah, no, I was praying for a penis every night. My parents knew about it.
His parents were actually both doctors.
They knew, but they were not supportive. You know, I heard them, you know, they were talking about all the weird stuff I did.
How he would rip the arms off of his Barbies.
Culling them, like, you know, with a black pencil and, like, destroying them. And
or the way Alex dressed himself.
When there was a swimming lesson in the school, I was there only with little pants, so you call them a bathing suit for boys. And, you know, I was, of course, very aggressive as a child.
A lot of fights.
You know, I got quite, I was quite violent as a kid. So now I can laugh about this, but, you know, it was a drama at home. It was a drama. The constant try of my mother to get this behavior out of me.
Alex says pretty early on, his parents basically gave up on him.
They ignored me as much as they could, which was, you know, in a way it was saving me because I could wear whatever I wanted, could do whatever I wanted.
And then when Alex was 10, a little brother was born.
And that was a shock. That was a terrible shock because basically it confirmed that my mother wanted desperately a boy, but she didn't accept me as her son. That's what it was.
Alex said basically, you know, that was the first time he saw what, like it should look like, basically, when a parent loves their kid.
So,
when he was 15, he ran away from home.
I escaped to Hamburg, and in Hamburg you have a huge district called San Paoli, where they have all the prostitutes and, you know, all the bad things. And that's exactly where I went.
Some people kind of took him under their wing. He got a job, kind of figured out how to take care of himself.
I got lucky, but I know also very unlucky stories, but I got lucky.
Did he ever think about, like, transitioning to a male body?
He says he thought about it at one point.
But in the 80s, when I was 15, the opportunities you have had to become a man were very, very poor.
In particular, if you wanted to go down the road of surgery?
What I can remember from my family was constant talks about how operations went wrong, how they went wrong, and what went wrong. And so for me to go in a hospital to do an operation, this is not going to happen.
And of course, many transgender people don't end up having surgery. But anyway, after Hamburg, at some point, Alex fell into filmmaking and ended up in San Francisco working in the film industry. And so in 1996, he got involved in a production that sent him abroad to go scope out locations for a film that was going to be shot in Venice. So shows up in Venice in 1996.
How old is he around at this point?
29, I think.
Oh, so he's older.
He's not a kid at this point. Originally, he's just supposed to stay a few days. Kind of just enough time to do some research and scope things out. But somewhere along the way, he sees these guys rowing their boats down the canal. And for reasons he can't entirely explain, he's just transfixed.
I was fascinated by this kind of boat, and I was fascinated by the rowing style, that you row forward, so you actually see where you're going. So I was just fascinated, and I just wanted to try it out myself.
Eventually, Alex ends up actually meeting a gondolier and asks, like, do you think I could do this? And he actually ended up down at the gondola station as an apprentice. Did they ask you why you wanted to study?
I remember the first day. I was introduced by the head boss of the group. Okay, so this is Alex. She's going to be our mascot.
Because they saw Alex as a woman, and there had never been a woman gondolier.
Most of them thought for sure this was like a kind of a joke. There was a very old one who later said, now we have a gondolier with tits.
For the first several months, Alex says he basically just picked up after the guys.
You were the busboy for everybody, so you needed to clean their boats and to ship out the water like 10, 20 times a day.
He says it's really back-breaking, grueling work. For somebody that everybody sees as a woman, you'd think this would be like the worst place on earth. But, you know, actually...
Those first months in the city, just kind of with the boys, dirty jokes.
I thought this is great.
Alex knew all the gondoliers' nicknames, walked and talked and acted like them, and cursed in the same way. And he says he felt like he was part of this tradition of, you know, learning from these old guys who were mentors to him.
It was really like maybe the best time of my life.
It was like he was home.
And then the trouble began.
It started with a journalist. This is reporter Consuelo Turin. We met in a noisy cafe.
Consuelo started in 1996.
With a translator.
When Consuelo was a collaborator of Nuova Venezia.
She was a cub reporter in Venice, working for a very politically progressive newspaper. And she was out looking for her big story.
And she runs into our... How do they encounter each other?
Avevo visto Alex.
Consuelo saw Alex at one of the gondolier stations, and she was like, whoa.
It's obviously that this struck her attention. Chiaramente salta l'occhio.
It looked to her like there was this woman rowing among men and, like, seeming to kind of blend right in.
Per me, che sono veneziana, è stata subito. Consuelo was attracted by this vision, unusual vision for Venice. So she observed her. Mi sono piazzata lì al giglio e sono rimasta.
She said I camped out for like a whole morning and basically just watched Alex's behavior.
Ho cercato di.
But.
Mi sono fermata lì, ho osservato un po'.
Alex didn't want to talk.
I told her, I can't talk about it.
Told her, basically, I'm just a student. They're teaching me. Don't make this into a thing.
E chiaramente se la notizia fosse stata divulgata.
Consuelo said, "Listen, I recognize that you don't want to talk to me, that you're apprehensive, and that this might be difficult. And I get that this might even damage your reputation with the other gondoliers. But this is an important story. You're a pioneer. I can't ignore you."
And so Consuelo said,
"There are two options.
I'm going to write the story no matter what. So you can either talk to me and we can do the story together, or I can write what I think."
That was the offer. I said, it can't go out now. And she said, it will. It will.
And why wasn't Consuelo persuaded that she should wait?
Well,
there were journalists coming from all over the place, you know.
I think the story was going to get out there and somebody was going to write it.
And Alex never sort of stopped and was like, "Listen, Consuelo," or whoever, "let me just tell you the real story.
The way out of this is to speak," and yet he stays quiet.
Right.
Do you have a sense why?
I mean, so just to kind of give like some like data points that might be helpful in understanding kind of where we were. So we're talking 1997. Just to give you like a corollary thing, where we were in our discourse around LGBT issues was like Ellen DeGeneres, I think, that year.
This is so hard, but I
came out on her show.
I think I've realized that I am. I can't even say the word. Why can't I say the word?
And like shortly after it was canceled. Caitlyn Jenner was just a few years ago. Like we didn't even really have a grip on what transgender was. That wasn't a conversation that we were having in public. Can you imagine what it would be like to be like, guys, don't worry though, I'm actually a man. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't have gone over so well with the dudes at the gondola station.
Yeah. So what ended up happening after Consuelo and Alex had the showdown about the article?
Well, a couple days later, Alex was on the way to the gondola station.
I found it in the newspaper shop.
The headline?
Una donna sfida i gondolieri.
Una donna sfida i gondolieri.
A woman is challenging the gondoliers.
So I was like, oh my God, it's going to be hell.
So it's in the newspaper stand. Alex shows up at the gondolier station, and of course there's a big hello.
A big unfriendly hello.
Yeah, just like a, oh, hello, gondoliera.
Those boys, they got really, really angry. They were like, well, we do everything to teach you well, and, you know, now you're challenging us.
Alex says a lot of the gondoliers stopped talking to him. They wouldn't even let him wash their boats.
And then, you know, then of course then there were the ones who said, I told you in the beginning, blah, blah, blah.
Told you she was just going to blab to the press.
A woman is not a good thing, and the whole thing, you know, was like a little stone becoming like a huge, huge thing.
By the way, this is coming right before Alex is about to take the very first exam.
Oh, no.
There's actually a series of exams, and it gets a little complicated, but eventually, anybody who wants to be a gondolier has to take this rowing test.
And by all accounts, Alex was good.
Like, we talked to the guy who was the head of the Gondoliers Association at that time.
Alex I.
This guy, Fulvio Scarpa, was like,
"By Alex, for me, is more good the other men gondolier."
And this is the head of the guild?
Yeah. And we also talked to this legendary rower named Franco Crea. And he was also like,
"Sicuramente vogava meglio di un gondoliere."
Alex is better than most of the guys.
Abbiamo cominciato così, era appassionato dei cantieri di Venezia, delle cose.
So anyway, Alex takes the test and
I failed the exam.
Which wouldn't have been, that by itself wouldn't have been such a big deal because a whole bunch of people fail the first exam. But the thing was, there was a feeling that, like, something deeply unfair was happening.
According to Consuelo, a lot of people started to think maybe the fix was in.
Because there were other boys there who failed, who were better than other boys who did not fail.
Alex says, suspiciously, pretty much all the people that passed were sons of gondoliers or from gondolier families.
Because they have had the right last name. So then I got angry. I got a lawyer.
Alex thought this was going to bring attention to how corrupt the license practice is, how corrupt this association is.
I wanted that the exam is repeated for everybody.
And this lawyer was negotiating, and the Gondoliers Association was like, If we let everyone retake the test, that will basically be admitting that we favor certain families over other families.
That was exactly what I wanted.
But it's not what they wanted.
They said, we don't want the bad press of this. But then, and this is another moment, according to Alex, where his story just gets hijacked.
My lawyer negotiated without my permission.
According to Alex, without telling him, the lawyer, together with the Gondoliers Association, dug up this old law that says because Alex is a woman, I mean, he's not, he's a man, but they thought he was a woman. And this law says that as a woman, he had the right to take the test again, this time with women judges in the boat. When she came back and said, okay, here's what we're going to do, do you remember what you said?
I was pissed. I was very upset. That was not what I wanted. It has nothing to do with man or woman.
Do you think she was your champion because she identified with you?
Yeah, for sure. But it was not my story. It's her story.
But unfortunately for Alex, as soon as the lawyer did that, it became everyone's story.
Oh, yeah. Because
the press,
they ran with it.
In the next 2 months, every paper in town was writing about it.
Suspended by a gondolier's examination.
Alexandra misses the exam.
That gondola ban from foreigners.
Then, the story went global.
German catches a crab in her bid to become Venice's first woman gondolier.
Sexists sink first female gondolier.
Girl gondolier fights a male tradition.
Failed gondolier blames chauvinism.
And then things escalate into a full-blown gender battle. The gondoliers are, of course, super pissed because of all this press that they're getting.
Listen to me.
We talked to a couple of key, like, gondolier guys.
Alexandra, hey.
Well,
No.
They have some thoughts and feelings about him.
She had to pass a test. She didn't.
It's a disaster.
Alex says at one point things got so bad.
That was one of them who was saying, you know, gonna wait for you in a small little street and with a knife and I'm gonna kill you. Or I'm gonna. So I grabbed the guy and I said, where's your knife? I'm here. Get it out. You know, do it. That was one episode. There are many others.
So on the one side, Alex said he has gondoliers wanting to knife him. On the other,
that was terrible because then feminism kicked in. And
Alex said he had all these women rushing in to save him.
Where do you want me to, like?
Because they thought he was a she.
We read in the paper that she had tried to take the test and had failed and had called foul, saying that the Venetians were mean and, you know, sexist and wouldn't let women become gondoliers.
This is Jane Caporal. She was active in the community of Venetian women rowers at the time.
What women, by the way? Like, there aren't any.
Well, so there weren't any women gondoliers at that time, but there's a whole community of female rowers. They have teams and they race.
I've been doing Venetian rowing for over 20 years.
And being a female rower in Venice?
It was very difficult.
Elena, this woman rower I was talking to.
Last week I was with my rowing partner.
Was like, I'm routinely, when I'm out on the water, like old men yell at me and say,
hey, what you doing? Return back home in the kitchen. Cooking or cleaning your house, why are you here?
Don't you know, you're just a contorno. You're just a side dish.
They both told me when it comes to racing, there's a big discrepancy in the prize money.
The men are getting like four times as much prize money as the women.
We are now trying to convince the city of Venice, who gives prizes, that we are like men. We are not less than them.
We hear all these women who have been, you know, incrementally busting their ass to try to be taken seriously in the sport.
We are here. We can do this.
And when they saw this press about Alex fighting the gondoliers, they reached out.
I sent one of the other consiglieras down to speak to her. You know, come to our club and come and work with us and help us out, help us teach people.
You've got your back.
But she wasn't interested.
No, of course not.
Because to Alex, there are two problems. First of all,
you cannot compare the gondolier rowers with the racing rowers.
There are two different styles of rowing. And second of all, the sense I got was that it was kind of like, I don't want to row with you. You guys all wear matching white skirts. Like, not my thing.
So I remember there was a lot of resentment.
You're a woman. How can you be one of us in this battle for the equality?
Some people, they see me and then they are convinced that I'm a feminist, that I am one of them, and I'm not.
And all of this comes to a head in October of 2004, when Alex has to retake the test, and this time with champion women rowers in the boat, judging him.
There was a lot of pressure.
Everything about this test is supposed to be a secret. The location of the test, the path that Alex is going to row.
I've had no clue where we're going to go.
But suspiciously, as Alex stepped into the boat, he noticed that
there was a huge crowd
lined up all the way down the canal.
Gondoliers and their friends.
And they're shouting and yelling.
People were screaming all kinds of swear words and all kinds of go home. And you cannot imagine the hate.
He had female rowers in the boat glaring at him. There's press lined up along the entire way.
Plus the tourists, plus everybody. It was full of people. I felt like I'm in a ring. I tried to block it all out because I needed to do an exam. I wanted to do a good performance. And I wasn't able. It was hell, one of the worst days of my entire life. I really don't wish that to nobody. That was real hell.
Hello, this is David from Berlin. Radiolab is supported in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org.
Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call the shots on your auto insurance, too. With the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Radiolab is supported by Babbel. Sometimes self-improvement can feel like a pretty overwhelming journey. So what if this year you just got a tiny bit better every day? When you're learning a new language with Babbel, that's exactly what you're doing. Babbel is a science-backed language learning app with quick 10-minute lessons that have been handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. You can learn everything you need to have real-world conversations, café s'il vous plaît, from vocabulary words to culture and more. And if Babbel can help you start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks, imagine what you could do in a few months or a full year. Here is a special limited-time deal for Radiolab listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/radiolab. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/radiolab, spelled babbel.com/radiolab. Rules and restrictions may apply.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, "Sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough." This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich. This is Radiolab.
And we return now to a story from Kristen Clark and David Conrad about Alex Hay, transgender man who became somehow the first female gondoliera in 923 years and thus an international feminist hero sensation.
And so we now find Alex being painted by everybody in town in colors that he doesn't particularly agree with.
Yeah. And what's interesting, according to Kristen, is just how easy it is to do that to someone.
Okay, so I'll tell you, as we were doing the interviewing and the reporting, I'm feeling like I have a good grip on Alex's story. I'm feeling like, oh man, I know what it feels like to be inside of a narrative that feels really icky. And so I feel like I'm kind of getting it and I'm like understanding the full Alex and like it's about all of these other things that have nothing to do with gender. So Alex's story isn't about gender at all. And for me, that made sense because I was like, in my life, gender has been a box. Like, even when you're in the right even when you're in the right box, gender is a box and it can feel shitty to be in that box. And so I was like, yeah, let's bust open those boxes together. We're going to show, you know, we're going to show people who you are, Alex. But then we would have these moments where I would be like, wait a second. Like one night when we were in Venice, we were like trying to park our boat on the way to a restaurant, and like this guy is like trying to parallel park his boat, and Alex is kind of sitting there like chuckling at him, and you can hear like David chuckling in the background, and so the two of them are like joking about it, and then Alex says like he drives like a woman,
like an old lady.
And I was like, and kind of rolled my eyes at it. But then later at the dinner, he was like, you know, though, like, I don't really think that, like, a real woman could do this job. And he was, like, all, like, macho about it.
Yeah, I remember you were shocked that I was saying such a macho thing. I remember that. No, of course, you are very right. Women can do everything. But this job, this is going to be very tough because it's a real cruel community. Ambience is very cruel and rough. And
but when you said that, I was so frustrated, and it was because I think I was attached to the idea of like it being equal, you know. I was just like super confused. Like, I don't know. I just
want
to know
what you
think.
Exactly. No, tell me what you want to know. Exactly.
I don't. And I'll admit, in the moment, I asked a kind of clumsy question. Do you feel... But it was just because you seemed to be almost like prodding me, you know, having fun and winking at David. And do you feel like you're fundamentally on a different team from me?
Okay. I am on David's team. But you can't see that because you identify with me. But that is not, I can't help that. How can I explain it to you? Let's put it this way. When I'm in a group of women, for example, and they start to talk, I feel uncomfortable. The chattings they have, I call it chicken chat, it's not really my cup of tea, you know. I like it, it can amuse me. But the minute they think that I am one of them, it doesn't amuse me anymore, and I feel uncomfortable. I'm a little alien there, because they think I am one of them, and I'm not. When I'm with the boys, I feel comfortable. If it is a nice group of boys, which I like, then we have the same type of humor and the same stupid jokes about women.
For Alex, I think what was really striking is that whatever it is that makes him feel comfortable being seen as a man but not as a woman, it runs very deep.
For me, there is a difference between men and women.
Not everybody or even every transgender person would feel this way, but the way that he sees it, if there were no differences...
There would be no wish to do transition, and there would be no transsexuality and things like that if it would be the same. But it isn't.
Yeah.
So you were seeing him as like a gender doesn't matter kind of icon, and he was saying, actually, it does matter.
Yeah.
Can I just ask a simpler question? When does he actually become the first female gondoliera?
Well, so Alex couldn't get one of these 400 or so special gondoliers licenses because he failed the test.
Right.
But
in 2005, I opened up my own business.
He figured out that if he partners up with businesses in town, like hotels, he can actually row for them privately.
At the time, I was looking at all the laws, and I found that it was possible to open up my own business without having a license, so I did.
And so, for years, he was just kind of doing this, quietly.
Then...
Alexandra, she's not a gondolier.
She's not a gondolier.
Yes.
She works for a hotel.
Some of the gondoliers began to notice that Alex was rowing passengers without a license. And, of course, they didn't like it.
She didn't pass a test.
Saying, like, you can't do that.
She's not part of our team.
Does not have a
driver's license.
You have to be a member of this organization. You have to have a specific license in order to practice.
What we can say? She's not a gondola driver.
I got some threats, verbal threats and damaging the gondola and things like that. All kinds of stupid little boy shit. So when they understood they cannot threaten me this way, then they pressured City Hall to change the law.
City Hall basically said, like, you can't row a gondola with tourists in it without a license.
And the law passed and was signed, and it became the real law.
Yeah. And so one day, Alex is out on his boat, and he just gets pulled over and basically is told, you're breaking this new law.
And so I wanted to defend myself. So we went on trial.
In court, it was Alex, his one lawyer, City Hall and the Gondoliers Association. There are four lawyers.
Four lawyers. I thought, you know, this is a lost case already. But City Hall lost.
City Hall fights back.
Case goes to the highest court in the land.
They lost again. In front of a court with me, a little stranger from out of nowhere.
Now, technically, the decision just said hotels can provide for their customers the way that they need to. So if they want to hire a chauffeur who happens to row in a gondola, they can do that. But what that actually meant was that now, for the first time, Alex could be considered a gondolier.
That was a huge deal, massive.
Along the canals, a woman paddles against the tide.
New York Times came in.
Woman takes on Venice gondola cartel.
Chicago Tribune came in.
First female gondolier rocked the boat.
And Le Monde came in.
So this is where we get all of those articles we read before we came to Venice.
Tide on Venice is...
The story went all over the world.
And every single one.
Bravo, gondolier, bravo.
The message was the same. We have our first woman gondolier.
That was something, it was unstoppable. I could not go in there and say, excuse me, you know, I'm not really, you know, identifying. No, it was gone, okay? It was done.
Alex, at this point in 2007, doesn't have any other income except for being able to market himself through hotels and eventually online.
And so... Of course, I need to have a website.
People are actively seeking out this person who has broken the gender barrier and become the first female gondolier in Venice.
So it would have been stupid to try to go against all this. It was already written.
So Alex decides to make his email, his Facebook page, and his website all prima gondoliera, or the first female gondolier. I'm wondering if creating a website with that name, did that feel like you taking control of that narrative? Or was that narrative taking control of your decision on that website?
It's nothing to do with what I want. It's a label. You know, I cannot change a label who has, you know, 20 years of history. Shut up!
Shh. Alex told us he was talking to his therapist one day at this transgender center they have near Venice.
And she said, you are like in a cage. This is like a cage for you. You can't get really out of this. You know, it's a difficult situation. It's a very difficult situation. But I'm tired.
Life at the Mastity.
By the time we met Alex, he'd been living almost 10 years like this, you know, just kind of between these two stories. At night, out to his close friends, but by day, giving these tours as the first female gondolier in Venice.
And every few months, every new tourist season, these headlines would just regenerate. First female gondolier, first female gondolier, first female gondolier.
And when we left Venice, that's kind of where we left him. Kind of hanging in the middle of that. And the impression that we got is maybe that's just going to be how it always is for him. But then...
It's quite a while we didn't see each other, so...
Fast forward 6 months, we get an email from Alex. He says he's in San Francisco. Big things have been happening in your life.
Yeah.
He had some news.
Well, you know, I remember when we were sitting, when we were last talking in Venice, and we were sitting on the terrace, I remember that I was already in, I knew there was something coming. But I wasn't sure what it was. It was a very difficult year. I was kind of depressed, which, you know, I'm not a depressed person usually. And so I was hanging out, I was not moving much. I was hanging out on my sofa and I was trying to think. And I was more and more every day I was unhappy about people telling me that I was a she and not a he. I don't know why I got completely intolerant. Before I was like, I don't care what they say to me. I care that they are nice. And now I was just like, I can't hear this anymore. This is so wrong.
Alex was about to turn 50 at this point. And it turns out that part of what was happening was that he was beginning to go through the early stages of menopause.
I was hot, I was tired, sweat breaking out for nothing.
After fighting with the gondoliers, fighting with the feminists, this was like a final insult.
So I have this idea that hormones might help with how I feel. I start to take the testosterone that was on the 7th of November, which after 6 hours, I get the first smile on my face in nearly a year. Like, you know, felt good. And the mood swings, they stopped. Yeah, so I'm like, I knew me, because I was looking in the mirror every day and I was like, who is this monster?
He decided to fly to San Francisco, meet with a doctor.
Some people wait like 2 years or 3 years before they start to do a surgery. I wanted to do it now because for me it was something like now or never. So now I'm here in San Francisco. I've had top surgery on the 24th. That's about, 4 days ago. And I wanted to start this year with a body which is confirming me. People see me as the first woman gondolier, and that means something for many people. It's not fair to them, so, you know, I needed to say something. I changed on the Facebook side, I changed the name. Now it's Alexei Gondola Tours. And I did already a statement on my old website. There is a statement.
It says, "Dear guests, colleagues, and friends, after holding myself back for 3 decades, it's time for me to depart from my wrong body. I am not changing who I am. I am becoming who I am."
And is he back in Venice now?
Yeah.
Huh. And do you have any sense of what that's going to mean for his job or his life?
I have no idea. I have no clue. I don't know how my voice is going to be in a month. It should drop. I have no idea how my face is going to look and my body is going to look in 2 years, 3 years from now. We all leave it as a surprise. No idea. That's scary.
Thanks to reporters Kristen Clark and David Conrad. Also thanks to Alexis Ungerer and Summer. And of course, a huge thanks to Alex.
For sharing a very difficult story with us.
Are you worried about what the responses might be to it?
Oh my God, David, I'm a warrior. You think this is boring me? I've been to worse, I guess.
I remember, like, when we were sitting out on the balcony, you had said something like, I don't want to do another battle.
Exactly. I don't want to do another battle. But if I have to, I will. Because I hope that I can at least help one person out there. Dalli un giro a tirata E con il cantone traggo i frutti Io chiudo lo sternello e saluto tutti.
This story was produced by Annie McEwen and Molly Webster with help from Kristen Clark, and we got reporting and translation help from Valentina Powers, Florence Ursino, and Anne-Marie Soma.
E il chimico, la chimica inventato.
We had original music from Jeremy Bloom and Alex Overington.
E all'università per erzo il cervello.
Okay, and on a very different note, very belated note, we would like to take this moment to say goodbye to our longtime reporter producer Brenna Farrell.
Not only goodbye, but like thank you times 50. Like thank you. To the 50th power.
Yeah, Brenna has been with us for many years, and I think with the station
for over
a decade, I believe, and done every single job that you can imagine. And so, Brenna, we here at Radiolab and the whole station are going to miss you very, very much.
We already do, and still do, and do even more, like right now.
Girami la rota. E aver tardone, credili, è un tormento. Stringiamoci le spalle, è il Novecento.
All right, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
Thanks for listening.
This is Kathleen Herring calling from Funny River, Alaska. Radio Lab is produced by Jad Abumrad. Dylan Keefe is our director of sound design. Soren Wheeler is senior editor. Jamie York is our senior producer. Our staff includes Simon Adler, David Gebel, Tracy Hunt, Matt Keelty, Robert Krulwich, Annie McEwen, Latif Nasser, Melissa O'Donnell, Ariane Wack, and Molly Webster. With help from Valentina Bojanini, Soham Power, Nigar Fadali, Phoebe Wang, and Katie Ferguson. Our fact checker is Michelle Harris.
Radiolab is supported by Cozy Earth. When you think about summer comfort, words like breezy or soft maybe come to mind. With Cozy Earth's luxurious bedding and loungewear, you'll get the comfort of home wherever you roam, allowing you to elevate your summer getaway no matter where or even if you're getting away. Cozy Earth bedding is temperature regulating and made from top-notch materials, including viscose from bamboo that can turn any living or sleeping space into a sanctuary of luxury and comfort. Their loungewear and pajamas offer you their signature level of comfort while maintaining an elegant fit so you can look cute and be comfy even if you're taking a long flight or car trip. Cozy Earth provided an exclusive offer for Radiolab listeners. Get 35% off site-wide when you use the code Radiolab at www.cozyearth.com. That's 35% off at cozyearth.com, code Radiolab. Discover your next destination for ultimate comfort at Cozy Earth.